Hey, it's me, Jamie Waxman, and I know it's been a really long time since the last Hot Socks podcast, but you can find me blogging a lot these days at The Stir, Cafe Mom, and on LA Weekly's After Dark blog. Today, I'm sitting in the offices of Luna Pads. I'm really excited about this, actually. I'm in Vancouver, British Columbia, and a few days ago, started tweeting, gotta love social networking, with Luna Pads themselves, the best protection, period, I think, for your period. I started using Luna Pads, these non-disposable, washable, machine washable, maxi pads of sort, menstrual pads would be a better word, years ago when I wanted to be more environmental and economical around my own menstruation practices. And so today I've taken a tour of the Luna Pads facilities here in Vancouver, and I'm sitting with Madeline Shaw, the co-founder of Luna Pads. Madeline, thank you for being here. Well, thank you for having me at your space today. I want to talk about the creation of Luna Pads. When did you conceive of the idea of making a machine washable, recyclable menstrual pad?
Well, it's a great pleasure to have you here, Jamie, and we're thrilled about it. And so Luna Pads, the genesis of the idea was in around 1993. And there was a few things that kind of came together at the same time to make it happen. The most sort of notable and obvious one was that I'd realized that I used to get bladder infections a lot. And after a bit of analysis and thought, I realized that a lot was pretty much every month and that it was coinciding with the arrival of my period, more or less. And so I would, you know, the way it would go would be I would start my period, I would put in a tampon, and less than 24 hours later, I would have a bladder infection. And it happens so often. I mean, you know, I was in my early 20s, and you don't want bladder infections all the time when you're in your early 20s because, you know, I mean, nobody ever does anyways. But I traced it, and I was like, huh, I'm getting these bladder infections when I start my period, and I wonder if it's something to do with the tampons. And I never considered using any other product other than tampons to manage my period. I just thought it seemed easiest and most, you know, least wasteful and suited my lifestyle. And so I decided to experiment with not using the tampons, but I never wanted to use disposable pads because they were so gross. Like, they were just so uncomfortable and kind of bandagey and yucky and old.
It does.
Fashioned.
It feels like you're wearing a diaper. You're aware of it all the time.
Yeah, or a little styrofoam mattress or something. And I mean, they're nasty. Disposable menstrual pads. Nobody likes them. And so I had actually heard of the idea of washable menstrual pads. There was a local, or not that local, but in southern British Columbia that was making some products. And at the time, and I got some of them and I looked at them, and I should explain at this stage that I at the time was training to be a fashion designer, and that was my career aspiration and goal. So ever since I was a kid, like 6 years old, I've been sewing and making clothing, and that was sort of my heart's desire. And so these pads that I saw from this other company, or not even another company at that stage, but they were just so bulky, and you actually had to sew Velcro into your own panties just to be able to use them. I'm not making this up.
Wait, do they give you the Velcro to sew in?
No, you had to go and get it. So, like, it was seriously impractical, but of course, being a hardcore sewer, I went and did it, and then I found that using, like, for my needs, the pads, like, they were just excessive. Like, I have a very light period, and they were also just really kind of unattractive, and I thought, wow, like, the fashion designer in me was just like, wow, here's a missed opportunity. Like, why wouldn't, if something made of fabric, why wouldn't it be beautiful? And so I quickly gave away the other pads to somebody else and started experimenting with a completely different design and completely different fabrics, and to make something that I thought was beautiful. And in the process of doing that and using the products and using the, you know, multiple iterations of all the different designs that I made, I realized that my cycle was actually really cool, and, well, that I wasn't getting bladder infections anymore. Thank you very much. And finally, the last piece was that I just stopped taking hormonal birth control pills after about 10 years. And so, like, I was really experiencing my cycle, like, really. Like, I, you know, from start to finish, the whole thing. And there I was at age 25, And I thought to myself, wow, I have spent the last 10 years of my adult womanhood not even really experiencing my cycle at all.
Not being in touch with it at all. Really? Yeah.
No, I mean, the whole, what I thought was the modern way to do things was to basically make it go away. So you kind of hide it with the tampons, right? And you're suppressing it completely with the hormonal birth control pills. And if you get a twinge anywhere, you're taking your Midol or you're taking your Advil and so on. And so I was effectively not experiencing my cycle at all. So when I did, it brought actually a huge amount of grief to me, like in the sense that I felt like, how could I have shut that down for the last 10 years? How could I have denied the natural functioning of my body to work the way it wants to work? And there were so many cool things about it. Like, it was just like, woohoo, let's go. Like, this is rad. Like, it wasn't easy, and it wasn't, and I was emotional and all, like, just in that crazy tidal ebb and flow of a woman's body and really kind of getting off on it in a lot of ways and learning so much. And it was like, God, I could have learned this when I was 16 or 17. And instead I'm learning it now. And you know, feeling when I'm ovulating and noticing the changes in the cervical mucus and noticing all of these things and kind of honoring my flow and realizing that effectively I'd been treating it as garbage by using these throwaway disposable products that were actually physically making me sick.
But it brings up an interesting point for me, and even just my brain started rolling. When you started using tampons, what was your education even around your period? Like, for me, my mother, when I got my period at 13, slapped me. That's the Jewish tradition. Mm-hmm. You'd get slapped. And that's it. Here's a pad. You don't talk about being in touch with your body. You don't talk about celebrating and learning about your body. So there's that whole piece of the puzzle too, where we just accept at, you know, whatever age. Like, when you got your period, did your mother talk with you about what it meant to get your period?
No.
Yeah.
No, it was much more, there was that how to deal with it piece, but there was no notion of honoring or celebration or, I suppose there's a certain degree of ritual in being slapped that is a cultural acknowledgement of you're a woman now, and okay, it's not, you're not getting the happiest greeting out there, but there's something that has happened to mark that. And no, there was nothing. I mean, my mom was cool, and she was kind of, you know, she was cool with it and didn't shame me or didn't, you know, not tell me what was going on or anything like that. But she just was, in her experience, there was no heritage or tradition or experience that would have given her the desire or the knowledge to bring about any notion of a rite of passage or anything like that. That I think girls need that. I think women need that.
I feel like it's a continual rite of passage too. You know, I've heard, I remember on a Twitter feed with a friend, she was complaining about getting her period, and I wrote back and said, I celebrate mine because one day it won't be here and that's the next phase. But I like being in this phase where I'm producing these hormones and I'm creating, my body is creating this magical egg is disposing of this magical egg every month. And you know, you brought up something, you said deal with it. And when I think of deal with it, I think of it's a problem, you know, that's how we look at everything. It's a problem. Here's how you hide it. Like you said earlier, here's how you deal instead of here's how you embrace. And here's how, I even think part of what we teach people about our menstruation, our periods, having them, has to go back to that ovulation and that what your body's doing the other 3 weeks or 21, you know, the other 21 days of the year, 28, whatever it is, we really never focus on that piece because every day your body is doing something different.
Exactly. And there's so much richness that is missed when we just make the conversation being about having your period as opposed to your cycle. And I also want to observe about that joy in the cycle. And I want to acknowledge women who have a lot of pain when they menstruate and they ovulate. And I think that's important because, you know, there's all this language around, you know, have a happy period and blah, blah, blah. And we've actually at Lunapad's been accused a little bit of, you know, period glamorization. And, serious, I know. I kind of to the exclusion of the experience of the really, really painful, really tough periods that are out there. So I think it's a little bit dismissive to just say, oh, have a happy period and,
sure,
and so on. And that said, I think that going closer to it rather than further away from it can often be the answer. And part of that joy, when what came up for me when you described it, of that kind of embrace of the cycle, is acknowledging that we're connected with the moon, and we're connected with the tides, and we're connected with some of the most powerful forces on Earth, and our bodies are dialed into that wisdom. Literally, they are. They are.
So true.
You know, and I just think that, like, that thought alone, it's like, woman, you have got something so powerful and just timeless inside of you. You are connected with all of this. And what happens when you sit down and you connect with that and you listen and you go there instead of pushing it away? And I feel that it sort of relates to our products too, because when you're using the disposable products, there's something inherently kind of crude and nasty and negative about them. And when you move away from that and you use something that is more gentle and more kind of in tune with natural rhythms and less wasteful, and that actually honors you, it can actually change how you experience your period and your cycle. And that's something that we see a lot with our customers.
I've always wanted to experience the red tent, that whole notion of women celebrating together. And the other thing, like, it's crazy, if you have roommates when you're all women, you do get your, you start to get your cycles at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's true. The amazing things our bodies tell us and do to sort of sync, even when we don't know if our brains are necessarily, you know, mm-hmm. thinking in sync or mm-hmm. something. You and I were talking before we started recording too about the education around young women, and you told me about a program that you're working on. I want to go back to you sitting in your apartment with Luna pads, but this is so mind-blowing to me in the Western world to think that when I have my period, I wouldn't actually leave the house, go to school, even maybe go to your job, because I don't have the money to have pads. And this is happening right now in places.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So just to give a little bit of perspective on it, there's over 60 million girls in the developing world. And so we'll just, for the purposes of this conversation, it does affect adult women as well. But we work with both. But the deal basically is that in a lot of places in the developing world, feminine hygiene products of any variety, so reusable, disposable, whatever, are either unavailable or unaffordable. So, you know, if somebody has to choose between buying food and buying a box of pads, well, she's going to buy food, right? And so the result of that is exactly as you said, that women don't go to work. They stay home because, I mean, what are you going to do? You've got to go out into the world with your menzies running down your legs, and you're trying to work and or in a girl's case, go to school and face extreme ridicule or discomfort or just embarrassment. That, you know, she's literally got her period running down her leg. And I mean, these are girls, often they don't even have panties. Okay, so not only are there no pads and no tampons, there are often social prohibitions against tampons, so they wouldn't necessarily show up. Or the girls and women are using extremely unsanitary means to manage their menses. So they're using bits of leaves and twigs and branches and old bits of paper and old blankets and things that are really unsanitary and getting infections from using them. So not only is this uncomfortable for them, in the case of the girls, well, in the case of the women, they're losing out on cash, money, making a living. But the girls, in not going to school, cumulatively has a terrible effect. It causes them to drop out of school earlier.
And you said there's actually research on this, like there are statistics that show you how much school they're missing and how much earlier are they dropping out?
Well, it's measurable. Like a girl, what they're best at measuring is the more education a girl has, the later the age of marriage and the age of first pregnancy. So pregnancy is really the kicker in all of this, because the leading cause of death of young women in sub-Saharan Africa between the ages of 15 and 18 is pregnancy
and childbirth.
So basically, the further out you can push that age, the fewer children she'll have in her lifetime. The later she'll have them, the healthier the children will be, the more career options that she will have, and so on. And so it really literally goes back to that. If they're missing a week of school a month at age 12, 13, 14... and or feeling shamed or ridiculed or whatever and falling behind, then the next thing you know, they're out of school at 14, married and pregnant at 15, and then at risk for all these incredible health risks and never able to really recover from that. So for every additional, I think, you know, I'm making this up at this stage, but every additional year of education, a girl will have 2.2 fewer children, for example, in her lifetime.
Sure.
And so that's, you know, it's taking it down from 8 to 6 or whatever, and those children are healthier and the family's healthier and more economically successful. So they really, it's becoming generally accepted in development circles that the future is educating girls so that they can be empowered women who are making their own reproductive choices and who are and are more economically empowered.
What is the age? What is now the average age for girls to start having their period?
Globally?
Yeah.
It's really different all over the place. It depends on their sort of nutrition levels
okay.
as well. Is very variable. But it's certainly dropping here in North America. I think it's gone down from 12, 13 to 10 and 11.
That's what... And so is it the more, like, processed foods you eat, the lower? Is that, like, are we at the lower end or are girls in, like, sub-Saharan?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think that my sense would be that the onset of menses would be, or menarche would be occurring more in North America at an earlier age because of all, and the theory is that there's more synthetic hormones in the processed foods that the girls are eating.
I'm sure.
Here. So, you know, you're eating a McChicken burger instead of the chicken that, you know,
it's not even chicken, yeah.
In your, you know, whatever, and if you're that fortunate. So, yeah, so the situation for girls, so what we do, and...
yeah, so what is Lunapads doing?
Well, Lunapads is supplying our products to through a ton of partner organizations who are typically NGOs or even individuals like Peace Corps volunteers and that kind of thing, and who have access to girls in these communities and are aware of the issue. And so we send over our kits because, and it's brilliant because they're reusable, right? So if you're sending them something disposable, not only do they not have any means to manage the waste, there's no landfill kind of thing, or they're incinerating it, and it's lasting them a couple of hours and then it's gone. So it's not a sustainable solution, whereas Lunapads are totally sustainable, and Luna panties as well. We make specialized underwear so the girls have something every day to wear, and it's been really successful, and we've just been invited to go to South Africa this November to distribute kits to 200 girls and create an educational program for them as a pilot project. And
that's so exciting.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah.
Are you going?
Yeah.
You're going to... Ah!
Yeah, we're both going. My business partner and I are going, and we're kind of in ongoing conversations right now with them. But we work in a ton of different countries, and just... through people come to us like almost every day there's somebody looking for something, and so what we do is we put the word out to our customers and say, hey, would you like to finance, like would you like to donate a kit to a girl, and so they can purchase some pads or just donate some cash, whatever they feel like, and though that money goes straight to these washable supplies going to, you know, wherever they're going.
Do you have a donate button on lunapads.com?
We do. It's on the main nav, lunapads.com. It's on the main navigation over on the right-hand side.
That's such a great thing to donate to. I'm going to make sure to do it as soon as I go back today to the hotel. So even backtracking a little now, 1993,
sure.
You're making these fabric pads. I mean, now it's very trendy and cool to be eco and to use reusable pads, but... what happens when you, what are your friends? Are people looking at you like, this is totally out of my league. I'm not going to use this. This is, you know, grosses me out to have to deal with the, because we emailed a little and I talked to you about blood. So I want to talk about that for sure.
Yeah.
But what were you first met with when you started sewing menstrual pads in your home?
Sure. There was a lot of ew and weird and gross and ick and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I mean, that still comes up now. Like,
sure.
we even have that, and, you know, bloggers will, you know, or people even, you read Twitter and people are just like, hey, I just found out about Luna pads in the Beaver Cup and, oh, you know, this is so disgusting or whatever. And you know, so that happened. But at the same time, I had a lot of, like, I just knew intuitively because my own, like, it was all coming to me. It had such a good feeling about it. Like, I just knew it because it made such a powerful difference in my life. I knew that it could do that for other women. And, you know, there's products and then there's things that change your life. And so there was enough positive feedback there. And also I attended a local business college and I wrote a business plan for Lunapads, and it was all guys, like all of the instructors and the whole administration was all guys. And they loved it. They thought it was brilliant. And they gave me a cash award at the end of the program.
Wow.
As like, you know, you will be one of the most successful businesses, blah, blah, blah. And so I got a lot of validation and getting it from people in the business community who were like, oh, wow. So what were the numbers on how many women use feminine hygiene products again? And what are the, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they thought it was really interesting. And I thought it was interesting. It was coming from men too, because that's a question we get a lot is like, oh, how do men react to Luna pads? And it's like,
that's a question I would have, or like seeing a bloody Luna pad or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't
think that's too graphic.
No. I mean, I think it depends. Like, I don't get my husband to actually wash mine, but he certainly finds them in the laundry. And, anyways, there's so much to talk about. It's crazy. But I, for the most part, I found men to be extremely kind of cute about it. Like they're sort of like, oh, honey, you'll save money and they're pretty. Why don't you try it? You know, and this sort of, because they themselves, not living in a woman's body, they don't, you know, they can't imagine this literally bloody pad, as you mentioned earlier, and having to wash it and so on and so forth. But what I want to say about the ick factor, what I call the ick factor, the ooh factor, is that people can change. And it's remarkable. Like, I think, you know, we've probably all had experiences in our lives, and whether it's around cultural stuff or how, you know, we changed in our diet. You know, once upon a time we ate meat, and then one day it was just like, oh, gross, I don't want to do that anymore. Or, you know, or something that you got turned on to that you weren't sure about or whatever. Like, it just takes some time. Like, we are living, our culture is deeply, like, we are deeply shamed around our bodies and around menstruation, around sexuality. I don't need to tell you, of all people. And it takes a while to get over that. And so it's no wonder that people are weird around it. Like, whenever anybody is just like, oh, you know, I can't deal with this, it's like, it's cool. Just give it some time. And so many customers, again, say to us, you know, when I first heard about this, I thought it was disgusting or weird or that I couldn't handle it. But it stayed with me and I kept thinking about it. And, you know, here I am 6 months later, a year later, and I'm ready. And I'm sorry it took me so long, but I'm over my junk and let's go.
So you mentioned your husband doesn't wash your pads for you, but that's a question actually personally I have, because like I said, I've been using Luna pads now for at least 5 or 6 years at least. I got them when I first lived in Brooklyn. And I don't know if I wash, I mean, I throw them in the wash. Mm-hmm. They're still great. They are still completely solid. I even use like a little shout or something on them before. But what is there a best way to wash Luna pads?
No, I don't think there is. I think it depends, for starters, on how heavy your flow is. So if you have a very, very heavily saturated pad, you really do need to rinse it in some cold water or soak it in some cold water before you wash it. So I would say that for starters. And beyond that, anything goes.
Okay.
Like, and I mean anything. But, oh, don't use bleach. Like, you
yeah.
know, 'cause
I mean, don't use things you don't contradict.
Yeah, I would say that.
I did have that ooh factor today, even a little, around the other product that you did not create, but you support. And are you the distributor here, or what is your, with the Diva Cup?
Yeah, so we're a distributor, which means that not only are we selling it to consumers, but it means that we are selling it to other businesses. Yeah.
Could you speak just a little bit for a moment on the Diva Cup? Because this is more in lieu of a tampon than meant like a maxi pad. And it's inserted inside. And I have to say, after feeling it and really getting it in my hands and seeing it, I want to try it. I'm very excited about it. But the idea of a cup that holds your blood can be a little startling for a lot of women to even see. Maybe even that much blood come out of someone at first, like realizing, I mean, you see it on a pad and it's out there already, but to actually dump the liquid out. What is your experience around the Diva Cup?
Well, it's something that actually took me some time to get used to, because once I stopped using tampons, I was really kind of uncomfortable with any internal feminine hygiene products. I was just like, I just want to, if it's not fun, it's not going in there kind of feeling. And I stuck with that for a long time. But the customers, there was demand from our customers for the product that was then the Keeper. And so I decided to try it. And there was a bit of a learning curve. But when I finally figured it out, I actually really liked, I really particularly enjoy swimming. And I love tennis and yoga. And you know, there's times where it's just not practical, you know. I can understand, particularly for sports. And what I loved about the cap was that you could wear it for a very, very long period of time. And also,
how long?
Up to 12 hours.
Wow. Okay.
Depending on your flow. But it's safe for that long. And the reason is because it's non-absorbent. And that was the really key difference for you tampon users out there going, why would I use a cup and not a tampon? So tampons are highly absorbent, as you know, it's how they work.
Super absorbent. That's how they advertise.
Super absorbent. And so how they get that way is they're treated with a number of chemicals, including surfactants and different kinds of plastics and bleaches and waxes and perfumes and all kinds of stuff. And so I know it sounds horrible.
It just sounds horrible.
It is horrible. But it's performing, you know, a need. And if you haven't thought about it any other way, then okay. So what's great, or one of the things I really disliked about tampons when I did use them is the way they always dried me out. So you take it out and it almost feel like at the end of your cycle, it's just kind of a little bit scratchy almost.
Yes.
And so it's depleting all of your natural essential vaginal moisture, which is totally unhealthy. Like, you need that. That stuff is there for a reason. There's a delicate balance, and, you know, just leave it alone and don't be putting surfactants in there. And the Diva Cup totally does not do that. So it's made out of medical grade silicone, and it's a cup, so it's catching the flow and it's not absorbing it. And I mean, I will say that there's a bit of a learning curve to using it. But as someone, especially if you have any kind of facility or experience with diaphragms or cervical caps, or just like to go, like, you know, maybe you check where your cervix is at and kind of spending a fair bit of time with yourself internally, or maybe even through use of sex toys and that kind of thing, I think would be instructive, because there's just that comfort level of like
being inside your body and knowing yourself. Yeah,
exactly. And a lot of women have found it, even if they were sort of put off by the idea, once they got into it, they were just like, wow, I kind of feel like I know myself better. Which is one of my favorite benefits of our products, is like it just leads to self-acceptance. It's like the more time you spend down there using the products and kind of even noticing the flow, like it's almost, for me now when I take out my Diva Cup, it's almost like a science experiment. It's like, oh wow, weird, it's kind of gloopy or whatever. And it sounds like some people would be weirded out by that, but I'm just so used to it by now. It's just like, this is just what my body's doing. And especially after I had a baby, it's like, look what my period has ultimately delivered to me.
That is the neatest gift, right? And it makes me think, I was thinking about this when you were demonstrating the Diva Cup before, like menstrual blood must be good for like plants or something. Like where can you actually pour it that it would even be good for the earth? Because this is the kind of stuff, I mean, the placenta, everything about reproduction in some way serves on a larger scale. So I was thinking about ways that you can even reuse, that might skeeve some people out here, but reuse the menstrual blood, because it's got to be so rich in so many nutrients that we could like give back.
It totally is. And it's actually very rich in minerals in particular. Mm. And yeah, absolutely. Plants love it. I find a nice thing to do is, especially if you're in a forest environment, is kind of make a little offering of your blood to a tree. It could be a little bit overwhelming for your house plant if it's not diluted in water.
Okay.
But you know, there are also a lot of people who are out there watering their plants with their urine. It's very high in nitrogen, so it's a great alternative to synthetic fertilizers. And I know I may be feeling like, whoa.
No, I'm totally excited.
It's not just the reproductive stuff. It's not just the breast milk and the menses and so on. We're part of this cycle of life, right? That is bigger than us. And I think the closer that we are to that, and the more that we participate and kind of are informed and sort of surrender to it in a way and celebrate it, I think it's a really healthy perspective that carries over into everything else, into our consumer habits, into our intimacy, into how we relate to the world. And because we're just kind of like going, wow, my body is amazing and has value to the earth. I'm not just taking stuff away. I can put something back.
Yeah, for me, like my brother and sister are both medical doctors. And for so long, the honestly, my mom used to punish me as a child by saying, not punish, but torture me more is the word, by saying blood, blood, blood. My skin would crawl. I just didn't even want to know it was in my body. But like I was saying to you earlier, having gone off the pill a few years ago and really getting in touch with my cycle now, I find it the most incredible thing. Like, I like to see how heavy my flows are, where they're at, when they're, you know, chunkier. And even talking about this with you, it's interesting because I want to stop myself when I say the word chunky, like there's something wrong or awkward, but it's just a part of, if we keep that dialogue going, then it's okay to say, like, you know, yeah, today my periods were thick or whatever else, or why is my period so thin or anything. But it's really the words to use to describe it are still in my head in a space of like caution.
Well, I want to reflect back too, is like in our culture, we have very strong conditioning around blood. So it's not just the weirdness around periods and all of that kind of like, ew, it's like blood means an injury. Blood, you know, there's a message in our brain that is very powerful and often true. Like somebody, when you see blood as on somebody's body, it often means that they are injured. And I think that's what I'm hearing when I hear your mother's voice, especially, you know, who may have encouraged her children to become doctors and sex educators and so on, that maybe that was the, so it's a rational response on some level, you know what I mean? And yet when it shows up around the period thing, there's a lot in it is all I'm trying to say.
So that brings me back to the taboo of period sex is something that's really, you know, I have been on both ends of the spectrum with partners where they are fine with it, love it, embrace it, even want it. And others who are like, that is the most disgusting thing in the world. I will not touch you when you have your period. So do you think that it goes back to that whole notion of blood and injury? Like what are your feelings on period sex?
Well, I'm personally in favor of it. It'll come as no great surprise. assuming that, you know, that you, as a menstruating woman, want to have sex.
Of course.
You know, and that feels good to you because for some women, that bleeding time is a time of quietness and introspection and just self-honoring and kind of a gathering of energy personally. And you know, if that's how you feel, awesome, great, fantastic. It's the area where I'd really like to kind of shine a light is where either you or your partner feel weird about having sex when you're on your period. Like maybe you'd like to, you're aroused and, you know, it seems like it'd be fun. Oh, but I'm having my period. And it's like, well, why is it stopping you? You know, like what's the thing? Like, okay, yeah, it can be messy. Sure, it can be. Sure. And but that's what towels are for. Mess, you know, sex can be messy anyways. And whatever. And so I think there's a really powerful taboo around there. And I think maybe it does. It's part of that injury piece, but I think it's partly, it's partly our culture. It's like, you're supposed to be so tidied up and plucked and clean and, you know, sanitized and whatever, that culture for women that tells us, you know, you're not allowed to have any, you know, pubic hair practically and that business, or you're not allowed to have, you know, dimples in your ass or wrinkles or stretch marks or whatever the thing is. And so I think it's along those lines of just like, ew, what do you mean your body isn't perfect and, you know, tight and hairless and blah, blah, blah. And
clean all the time.
Oh, I can't stand it. And so that's a piece. But I think ultimately the kind of menstruophobia, if you will, it goes back to that it's such a tangible evidence of women's reproductive power and sexual power. And that's hard for people to handle, men and women alike. Like, we've just been taught to really fear it. And it's for the same reason that people are uncomfortable seeing a woman breastfeed. You know,
takes us out of that realm of almost the stereotypical beautifying in some ways too, of like a woman is just, she doesn't fart, she doesn't burp, she
That's
doesn't
right.
poop. And it reminds me too of a comedian. I remember this, I don't want to call it a joke, but it was a joke that has stuck with me for so long. He said, I never trust anything that bleeds for 7 days and doesn't die.
Right.
And like the whole harsh reality of like that idea that if we bleed, like there's something wrong with us. Like you said, the sickness. The other thing I thought of as you were speaking about the intercourse factor is that I have been with guys who, when they have blood on them, have freaked out because they now see their bodies in this way where they have seen blood in areas like even just the groin or the inner thigh where they didn't see it before, the belly. And so for them, that visual dealing with it is sometimes a big part of the problem. Like, and I, you know, I think it's actually like, I think it's sexy with ejaculation, with anything, like, to be shown on the body. So to me, it's like a, just another reminder that we were together and that this is that moment. But I do think that there must be a little bit of that psychological thing for guys where when they see the blood on them, there's this negative reaction too, just without even thinking what it is. But do you have any, and you may not, because I don't know that I do, like, any suggestions on how, although I guess I could think of some, how to really, if people are, like you said, in that space of wanting to get to a place of celebrating the body at any time of the month and in whatever ways that is, of embracing the sexuality and sensuality around their periods.
Sure. I mean, I think it starts by just really being introspective and noticing, because I think probably what happens for a lot of people is they kind of unconsciously just avoid initiating sex or, you know, with their partner at that time of the month. And so for whatever reason, it just magically kind of doesn't happen. But I would, it's one of those things where, you know, a little mindfulness goes a long way, and ask yourself what's happening there. And I would say just some internal dialogue. And also I think, you know, there's a very real connection, and I know, okay, I sell these products and all this stuff, but they changed my life and this is why I do what I do.
And that's why you're good at what you do too, because it's really the passion's there.
It is. And I would say, think about how do we treat our genitals? How do we treat our vulvas, our vaginas, all the rest of it? Like, you know, even when we're wiping ourselves after we've peed, or when we're, you know, when we wash ourselves in the shower, and, you know, I think how we treat our bodies in that way when we menstruate and in kind of our non-sexual, if you will, parts of our lives, there's some carryover. And so, I don't know, I know for me, I started enjoying sex and having orgasms much more easily after I stopped using tampons. And I think it was because I was just more lubricated, like, duh, right? And so it's, and but also because I wasn't doing this negative thing once a month and then trying to do positive things the rest of the time. It was like consistent behavior of taking care of and honoring and being gentle with and, you know, this precious, precious part of myself. And it carried over into other parts of my life. So I would also encourage women wanting to go deeper in that to consider their choice of feminine hygiene products, because it, I think it really makes a difference in terms of just how we feel.
And I think that goes beyond even feminine hygiene in all your products, like what you use in your hair, what you use on your skin, what you use on your face, because you're right. As I started to make more conscious choices around mm-hmm. how I was going to treat my body, my body treated me better, A, and B, I just felt better in my body, more like a goddess, more like the idea of bleeding is like my right and my power, and that I'm rooted in those times. And it's really important. And like I said, I mean, I've been a fan of Luna Pads forever, well, not forever, but for a long time. And this has been so fantastic. Madeline Schott, lunapads.com, Twitter. You have, I know there are a couple handles. There's Luna Pads.
Yep.
And how else can people get in touch with you?
I'm Luna_Diva. And my beautiful, wonderful business partner, Suzanne, is Luna_Gal. And but if you do nothing else, follow Luna Pads on Twitter, because that's a much more active account.
And honestly, I highly recommend anybody who's listening to this podcast, man, woman, or alien, to seriously think about your body and what you can do, not just for your body, but for the earth and for whatever other things you can think of right now. I can't. But really what you want to do for yourself, your health, your pleasure, your knowledge, your all of it. And at least, if nothing else, consider how you can look at your periods and change the negative to positive, and check out Luna Pads, really. I love them. I'm Jamie Waxman. I'll be back again soon with another Hot Socks podcast. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter, too, at JAMYE. Bye.